Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Understeer podcast. Yes, long time. We've had a little bit of a break, but I am, as always, delighted to welcome Gus. I hope you're doing well today, mate.
Hello, I'm doing very well, as usual. Thank you.
Yep, and for anyone who doesn't know, we've got some exciting news for Gus. What's going to be happening for you this year, mate?
Yeah, so this year I'm going to be racing in the European GT4 Championship with United Autosport alongside Dean McDonald. So that's very exciting.
And how is that going to be different then? Is that a step up for you from the British GT? I mean, maybe an obvious question.
For sure, it is. It's in terms of GT4, it is a big step up. I mean, for anyone that's not watched British GT, there's two categories that that race on circuit, GT3 and GT4 cars. So obviously me being GT4, you get less attention and it's more on the GT3s. European GT4 is solely GT4, so you're completely one make in terms of the category, and it's a lot more competitive. Obviously, it's on the European stage instead of the domestic British stage, so that adds another element into it. And we're also the only two United. We've got two cars entered, and we're the only two McLarens. So that's definitely exciting that we're going to be properly representing McLaren. Obviously, Zach Brown's the owner of United Autosport, so it's a bit of pressure on our shoulders. But I'm sure we'll deliver. We've got a really good setup, really good car. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I mean, looking at that calendar, you've got what? First race, Monza, then you're going to Paul Ricard, Zandvoort, then Spa, then Nürburgring and Barcelona. That's not bad places to race.
Yeah, it is an awesome calendar. All Formula One circuits, which is obviously, like, if you're any racing fan, that's your dream, isn't it? I'm really excited. I've driven Spa before, and it was in a little Ginetta, so I feel like I can fully appreciate how quick it was.
So down the Kemmel Straight that took like 12
minutes.
Yeah,
down the Kemmel Straight, and like you know, you're getting blown backwards, and it's just like what to do. But no, on a serious note, it's going to be great in a GT4 car. Obviously, GT4 cars have really good top end speed as well. So around Spa, that's going to be exciting.
Will that be in the same car as you were driving last year?
It's the same model. It's McLaren 570 SGT4.
I was going to say 720, so it's fine. And yours one of them.
Yeah. I wish it was, but you know, that's hopefully next year. But you know, McLaren. So very exciting.
And how much have you been doing? Any sort of preparation for? I'm assuming you have on the sim or anything like that.
Yeah. So obviously if you were in Britain, it's a lot easier to test, isn't it? So you don't have to worry about COVID, but due to COVID, we haven't been able to go to the circuits, which is a huge shame. That's another element that's going to add a bit of a challenge, that obviously we'll be racing against people that have driven the circuits, and neither me or my teammate have driven a GT4 around any of them. So that would be a challenge, but you know, a challenge that I'm excited for. In terms of preparation, just loads of sim work, and obviously just fitness, trying to stay fit and keep as sharp as possible before the season commences.
Yeah, I suppose it's nice in a way that you've got, it's not necessarily like Formula One where it's bang, 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 you know what I mean? It's sort of spread out across the year, so that this is just an assumption, are you going to be sort of preparing for each race sort of as it comes between the gaps, or are you doing sim work on all of the, is it six rounds in the calendar now?
Yeah, so no, that's a really good point, actually. I guess the best side is that we do have a really nice chunk of time between each weekend, so between each race. So it means that you can solely focus on one race at a time. So obviously I've been doing a lot of Monza work and stuff, and then after this, I can then go on to the next one, which is obviously exciting, which is Paul Ricard. So that would be good. And so it makes preparation slightly easy. Obviously, I wish there were more race weekends, but it's still good.
Beggars can't be choosers.
Yeah, I mean 23 races. Is it 23 for F1?
Yeah, Formula 1, yeah.
That's quite a hefty amount, isn't it? But yeah, I'm sure the drivers aren't complaining.
starting off with Monza, that's the one you're going, I suppose we start there and go first. What's the race weekend? I don't know if you know yet, but what's sort of this race weekend? Is it going to be different to a British GT race weekend? Because obviously you're going to have to travel now.
Yeah.
And sort of what's the structure of that? Do you fly out on a Thursday or what's going on there?
Yeah, no. So that's a good point. And so obviously with British, with Silverstone, for example, I wouldn't even stay anywhere. I would drive up each morning because it's close to my house. So obviously it's a lot easier, but logistically Europe's different. So we're flying up on the, so I'm flying tomorrow. So today is a Monday and I'm flying on a Tuesday to Italy. Obviously with COVID and stuff, I think it's better if you maybe go out a tiny bit earlier. Also, if you go a bit earlier, if your flight gets cancelled and stuff, you still have a bit of time. You have a buffer, don't you? You don't. Yeah. And then so we fly out tomorrow. We've got Wednesday for preparation. No track time, though. So we'll be
track walking.
Yeah, catching up the team, you know, track walk, exactly, which is always important, I think. And Thursday and Friday, we have testing. And then Thursday is a test day. Friday is free practice. And then Saturday is qualifying and race one. And then Sunday is the second and last race of the weekend.
Well, where can we watch it then?
So I think it's on GT Open's YouTube or European GT4.
Okay, right.
Guard there a bit. It's on GT World, sorry. GT World's YouTube. They'll be streaming it on YouTube, and I'm sure also Facebook and Facebook. So
make sure you take some photos. We put them up on the old Instagram.
Yeah, definitely. If we could do a live and stuff like that whilst I'm there as well. A tour or something. That'd be quite cool, I think.
For sure. I mean, I've done Monza myself 2 years ago. I went to the Italian Grand Prix. It was 2 years ago.
Was it 2018 or 19?
No, 19 when Leclerc won.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was crazy because, you know, Ferrari winning at Monza. I mean, if you have time, you've got to make sure you go and see the old Monza with the banks and stand on the banks. Something
pretty cool to see. I mean, that's why I'm really happy I've got all of Wednesday. So hopefully, a lot of my fellow racing driver friends have told me that there's good pizza restaurants around there as well.
Monza itself, I mean, I don't know what the restrictions are, probably restrictions because of COVID.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's lots of, I remember there being a really nice park as well. You can go and walk around because I'm thinking about COVID here. The food there obviously is excellent, as you would expect with Italy. You've got to get a pizza in, even if you're in a race weekend.
Pre-race meal, you know, nice and healthy.
get some chicken on there, get the protein, the carbs. So what are you flying out in tomorrow? Is it just a standard economy car class?
Yeah, the standard, you know. It's not even British Airways, it's Italian Airways or something, I think.
Dodgy.
Yeah, so it will be interesting, I think. Interesting flight, but it's been obviously, it's really difficult obviously as well, because flights aren't as frequent as they once were. Obviously they used to be probably 3 or 4 flights a day going out. Now there's 2 a week. So it's really difficult to work out. So that's why you've got to fly out quite early, to be honest, because you just can't really risk it.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. But I'm sure you'll have a good time. I'm a bit ashamed you're not getting a chartered private jet, but you know.
I know, but you know. We move. I should really get onto Zach about that, shouldn't I?
If he's lucky enough to have you in his team, he should be at least chartering the jet.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's not that much additional cost.
So what have you been working on, sort of Monza? Because I'm sure there are sort of, you don't necessarily want to give much away. But as in, there are probably bits you struggle at. For me personally, I know it's a bit random, but when I'm playing, you know, the old ACC or F1 or whatever, I just always get track limits at Ascari because, you know, I mess up the first and then just go straight on or whatever. And then just end up with like 12 seconds of pens at the end of the race. But it's like particular bits that you're focusing on, or are you just going round and round and round and round?
Well, it's interesting because, I mean, like you, I first got the first F1 game, I think F1 2010. So, and I always
mine went, was 2012.
Oh, there you go. See, I beat you. That was a good game. So in terms of Monza, in like on sim wise and on console wise, I played it just countless times, like so many times. And obviously in F1 cars, you're braking at like the 100 meter ball. From like 17 miles an hour, and so for me going on the sim and doing it straight away, I had to. You're braking 100 meters earlier. You're braking at the 200 meter or just before the 150 meter board, and obviously you then got the weight. And like you said, with weight, track limits then also do become a problem because the car is moving about so much. Whereas F1 cars are so planted and reliable in the sense of you know exactly what it's going to do. It's quite like you said. It's quite easy to overdo, but it's quite also quite easy to kind of bring it back a little bit and then not do track limits. Whereas in GTs, they're moving around, especially the McLaren's quite a heavy car. So it's got really good top end, but it's quite heavy. So that's been a challenge, is kind of actually working out where to actually brake and where the best braking is. And also just finding a limit of not overdoing it, especially into, like you say, both Lesmos and the Ascari. They're quite easy to think you're going to be fine, and then the next thing you know, you're over the other side.
Bump, deadly.
So that's been the main thing. I think braking, obviously, Monza's very much braking. I think brake management and brake temps will be really important at Monza. So and keeping the tyres warm as well. There's quite a lot of factors in Monza. Obviously, it's quite a unique circuit, isn't it, in terms of how high speed it is, the nature of it. So. Braking's the main thing I've probably been working on for Monza.
Crucial, you don't want to go without the brakes, like
don't want to have a founder.
Yeah, when I've got a brake failure. Okay, Sebastian, stop the car,
Yeah, exactly. I've got a brake smashes through the barrier.
And what's the pit stop procedure then? Like, is it the same as British GT? And have you been practicing any driver change, or is that all to come this weekend?
Yeah, so the pit stop is the same as British GT. If you don't know, it's you have a minimum pit stop time, and we have a driver change, refueling, and tyre change. It's a shorter race, so it's an hour. It's an hour race, so half an hour each. So some races you won't be doing a tyre change, I think. So that's the way it works. We obviously haven't had chance to practice. Luckily, Dean, my teammate's done, I think, 2 years or even 3 years in GTs now.
Okay.
Last season in GT3 McLaren, actually. And then the season before that in HHC, which was the team I raced for last. Yeah. So we're quite familiar with it. The difference is this year is Dean has a... For the first time in my whole life, I'm the taller driver. So Dean has a seat insert. So that's the one thing I think will be.
You got to switch the seats, don't you?
Yeah, the obviously seat belt length, especially around the laps, the lap belts, the ones that go, they're really important because they're the ones, people don't realize they're the ones that really air into the seat. So that's the thing that will be a bit more. We've got all of Wednesday to practice. That's what Wednesday will be for, is practicing stuff like that. And obviously, during testing, we'll do simulated pit stops, simulated driver changes, driving to the time. And so I'm sure it'll be fine. We do have, we're fortunate in how much preparation we've got whilst we're there. So yeah, that'll be fine, I think, hopefully.
Yeah, I can imagine they always speak about the adrenaline doing a pit stop in Formula One. I can imagine, you're first in the race, right?
Yeah.
You're coming in and you do a driver change. Yeah, that must be pretty. You must be pretty nervous for that. You got to have nerves.
It's I think GT driver changes are so underestimated because, of course, in F1 it's incredible the speed they do it in, and it's all on the actual guys changing the tyres, isn't it? And but in GTs it's all on. It's as much as it, there's even more factors. So you've got the guys changing the tyres, the guys refueling, the guys timer, because obviously it's a minimum time. So if you go quicker than the minimum time, you're going to be penalised. And then you've also got, it's the drivers, we've got to loosen our belts as we're going into the box, so they're already loose, climb out the car, put the, make sure the seat insert's right. And the adrenaline, it's like the most chaotic 1 minute of anyone's life, a GT pit stop. It is, there's so many things going on at once.
You got to think about, do you have driver cards as well?
What do you mean?
As in, do you know, in some of the endurance races, they have the driver cards that they insert in, show who's driving. And
I didn't know they had to have that.
Well, no, I was just guessing, because in Le Mans.
So the way it works is that we've got it's literally like a little toggle switch, and it's just numbered one and two. And so it will say Dean one, me two, and when you're going, you literally flick the switch down to two, and then the timing and the data knows that it's now, say, me in the car. That is such an easy thing to forget. You mentioned car, I think that would be way easier, because obviously you've got a physical thing, because it's so easy with the chaos of the pit stops, doing up your belts, making sure the time is not too low, doing your radio check, because you have to make sure your team radio is plugged in, then you've got the safety net, make sure the door's properly closed. Like I said, make sure the team radio actually works. And then so just to remember a tiny switch, it's actually rather difficult.
It's all these little things that you don't really think about, you know,
Completely. And just making sure you're ready, you're in gear. Do you know what I mean? It's just stuff like that. And to make sure you meet the pit stop at the right time. Because obviously, if you go under the time, even by a tenth of a second, you're going to be penalised for it. Donington, I went over the pit lane thing. 8 tenths, and I got a 1 second stock co penalty. And obviously that ruins your time. For 8 tenths gained, you've then lost 25 seconds. So it's completely not worth it. But then, say you're fighting for the lead and there's a second gap, and if I enter the thing 2 seconds after the thing, then I'm a second behind the car that I was. So it's a really fine margin, but yeah. Should be good.
Do you sort of know who's going to be taking the car first? Have you decided that yet?
No, that will be decided on. It's usually you can decide it relative after the practice and testing. You get an idea of maybe who's got the pace over the other one that weekend. So there's a lot of strategy that goes into that. Obviously, it's also weather dependent. Who in the other cars is starting and stuff like that. So. We'll decide that, I imagine, on the Friday, the Thursday or the Friday. You have to submit your driver forms on usually by Friday evening. So that's when we'll be deciding.
I can imagine T1 lap one.
Oh, it's going to be proper, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm sure. You want to get, well, you don't want to be right in the middle of the pack for that. I mean, you will be as you're in GT4, but...
Yeah, no, I mean, I hopefully you're at the front of the pack, so...
But as in, are you with GT3s, or is it just GT4s?
No, so it's just...
Okay.
Which makes it a lot easier for... Obviously, my friends that don't have any idea what motorsport is when they watch, they're like... It says you're in, like, last season of it. I remember when we were leading it, we won at Donington and we were leading. And
you're in P11, mate.
Like, we were in 7th. What are you doing? You didn't win. I was like, yeah, I did.
I was just assuming that there'd be GT3s, that you'd, you know, add more chaos.
We're a support series to the GT World Challenge, so yeah, so that's kind of, they'll have their own race.
Oh, awesome. And I saw on sort of the release photos, you know, I saw Autosports Day, were you at the technology center?
Yeah, so we were, like I said, really lucky. Obviously Zach Brown, so we have a really close tie with McLaren themselves. It's why it should be a really strong season for us is we have huge manufacturer support from McLaren. So we went up to the McLaren Technology Center to get some awesome pictures and drone footage as well. There was a drone
crazy ride there.
So I'm sure there'll be more social media things to come about from that day, hopefully anyway. But it was rather wonderful being able to post those pictures on Instagram. I'm not gonna lie.
One for the gram.
Yeah, exactly. Just to, you know, impress the ladies.
No, did you get? that's the first photo on the Tinder profile. Just immediately all in the bag. Did you get to go inside the technology center at all?
Yeah. So I'm lucky enough that I before I entered GT4, it was almost a decision between Aston Martin or McLaren, and which route which manufacturer I'd take. And Danny Buxton, who's head of McLaren drivers in McLaren GT drivers for McLaren, invited me for a tour of the MTC, the McLaren Technology Centre. It's honestly, you're walking down and I remember just walking. We were in a really random part of the building, and there was a little kind of alleyway to my left, and I looked down, and there was just a 2015 McLaren just sat there, just literally sat there. And it was like a little normal corridor. Do you know what I mean? You walk around it, and there's just random F1 cars just everywhere. It's like, why are they? So yeah, we went inside. We went inside it, and then I remember walking out. Senna's MP44 was just sat outside.
Oh my god! You're making everyone listening to this jealous, mate.
Yeah, I know, and it's so, but it's so that obviously because of COVID, there were only a few employees working in there. It's, you know, walking past, and I just was looking like, that is one of the most famous machines, most iconic machines in history, and it's just sat outside. So, yeah, I think they're going to move it into there. You know, their little boulevard road they have inside.
Yeah.
I think it was going to be put in there. So, yeah.
Didn't bump into any F1 drivers while you were there?
Unfortunately not. They were all in Bahrain testing that week. So, which was a big shame. But, you know, win some, you lose some.
Imagine if you just bump into, who's it now, Ricciardo and Norris, or one of them.
Danny Ric and Lando. Well, it's interesting because obviously I raced for HHC last season. Mm-hmm. And that was the first race team Lando ever raced for in
Genesis.
Yeah. So and obviously now United it's essentially this United GT4 team is primarily HHC from last year, but now on United. So there's a bit of a bit of connection, a bit of history of that, which is pretty cool, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty. Maybe you'll be in the McLaren drive soon.
I mean, you know, that's what I've got my eyes set on, but you know.
Wouldn't turn it down.
Yeah, exactly.
And what's it like? I don't know how much of a chance you've had to meet with, is it Dean?
Dean McDonald.
Yeah. How much time you sort of had to integrate, but what's he like from your sort of first opinions?
I've met him a few times. Obviously, I saw him around the pack. He raced for 2Cs last year, and they were always in our pit garage next to us. So So I got to know, obviously, he raced for HC, so he was often in our garage and stuff. We just had a good chat. And I've met him a few times this year. And he's a really lovely guy. We get on very well, thank God. Obviously, it's a disaster if you don't. I've been really lucky in terms of Dean this year and Chris last year. He was a lovely guy. So I think Dean, he's a very funny guy as well, which I like. So it's going to make for a good year, I think. He's a very fast driver, so obviously I'm not going to complain about that, am I?
Yeah. Steve, it will be tough. Are you expecting a good competitive battle then?
100%. Obviously, like they say, your teammates in GTs, there's a bit of a different dynamic in
you're working together.
You have to work together, but also it's hugely competitive because it's almost even more savage because you're in the same car. So you're in exactly the same car. So, you know, there's that element of whoever's slower, why aren't you as quick? Because you're in the same car, but... he's a very good driver, so it gives me that extra motivation to want to do better and, you know, hopefully be on his pace because he's got a huge wealth of experience.
Yeah, well, I mean, as I say, you gotta text me the times because I'll probably forget them, but I will be watching. We'll put something on the
As long as you're not asleep.
Yeah, I can't guarantee anything.
how has your sleeping pattern been? Is it all right?
Yeah, I mean, it's fine with sort of lockdown, but I find that once you're sort of out doing something and you get back to normal sleeping pattern, then when you're not, you know, 9:30, you know, sort of that sort of time when you're getting up, going to sleep at 1, 2 sort of time.
That's been what's difficult for me. Obviously, at university, it's quite difficult to keep a normal sleeping pattern, let's say. So that's why I came home quite early to sort it out. So now I've got it on track for Monza. So that was my worry. I was like, I can't be going to sleep at 4 a.m. at Monza, can I? So
no, yeah. I mean, is it hard to sleep before a race? Because you must be pretty excited, you know, before a race.
Yeah,
I
don't know if it's actually, that's a good point. Honestly, no, because usually you've been, say, testing or qualifying or whatever that whole day. So you're just knackered. Obviously, you get the nerve, but more often than not, you're just very tired. So it's when you wake up, waking up's the worst thing. You wake up and you just get that huge stomach churn of, oh God, today is the day. This is it. And you don't want to eat breakfast. I should put it that way.
I think I sort of know what you mean. And do you have like a way of controlling your nerves, or like, you get nervous or?
I quite like nerves traditionally. I've always been a really competitive person, so I often feel I perform better if I'm nervous or if I'm under pressure. That's where I'd say, I quite like that, and I've always been, I obviously like used to play football loads, and I loved the pre-game nerves. Obviously, racing's a whole different kind of nerves, but
yeah.
What about you? Do you what do you feel like you're like with nerves? Like, are you, because it's quite interesting how each person deals with them.
Well, no, interesting enough, I don't know if I've told you this before. When I was younger, I used to sing in a choir in the cathedral. Yeah. And I had to do like solos I sang in front of the Queen once. So you sort of get nervous for that.
Gosh.
It's a pretty cool thing. Claim to fame, if ever there was one.
Definitely.
I think that I sort of went through periods when I would get nervous and I wouldn't get nervous. I wasn't actually nervous. I did sing in front of the Queen or doing stuff on my own.
Really, you'll never be able to sing in front of a more, I guess, famous and bigger person ever, really. Now,
I mean, that was a good opportunity for me. So, I mean, I got to meet numerous members of the royal family, you know, important people in church, all that kind of thing. But I sort of went through phases of being sort of nervous and then not being nervous. And sort of when my voice started to break and I couldn't, like, go as high as usual, then I'll get more nervous, you know, about if there's anything high to sing, if I was doing it on my own. But, like, and then now, sort of, if I'm playing goal, I have, like, the wrong mindset. I have the wrong mindset. I would say that I'm always thinking about when's my next mistake coming. I'm not gonna make a mistake. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's an easy spiral to fall down as well, isn't it? Like almost sometimes when one bad thing happens, your brain will just let you go. Oh, what's gonna happen next? Almost. And
yeah, I mean the thing is with goalkeeping is that you make one mistake, right, and everyone's all over you.
Yeah, it's such a in terms of it, when you're an outfield player, it's a lot easier to, you know, you kind of get away with mistakes.
But it's just, you're really annoys me, right? It's just strikers, right? They'll miss an open goal and then no one will be defending this player. And it'll be like 2v1. And then they'll score and then people get annoyed at me. And I'm like, just defend, you know, just press the ball. But anyway, yeah, I suppose enough of football. But yeah. I mean, it's different for everyone else, isn't it? Sort of nerves. Some people like Kimmy, ice in the veins.
Ice in the veins. Honestly, that man, he's a good lad, isn't he?
I feel like nerves. I've always been told that nerves is almost a good thing, that it shows you care anyway.
I think 100%. And you're right. It shows you care. It shows that you want to do well, doesn't it? Because if you didn't care, you wouldn't be nervous.
Exactly.
But we get nervous, and it's such a crucial part of any competitive thing ever, really. Or something that means, like you said, whether you're singing in front of the Queen or sat on a grid of 30 cars, you're gonna want to perform, aren't you? Job. And so it's important how we deal with that. And my dad always used to say to me, and I used to do a lot of running and cross country and stuff, and I used to be that huge nerves, and just be like, just turn the nerves into positive energy and adrenaline, and then you'll be fine. And that's what I've always carried through into racing now. So that's good.
And are you ever thinking, do you ever think of like, if you crash, or is that not really something you think of as a driver?
No, you just can't.
I didn't want, I was a bit hesitant because I didn't want to put it into your head. You know what I mean?
No, it's not. Obviously, it's not really a thought that ever occurs. Like, I think one of the main, when I talk to people about it, especially people that don't know, their first question is, do you crash? Like, have you crashed? Like, do you ever think, what if I crash? And it's not, you just don't. Like, it's not that deep, really. I don't think. It's just, you know, you just don't. You don't think.
Yeah.
You're always, because there's a lot more to think about. There's so many other things to think about that you just, it don't. Obviously, if, say, you get a tyre blowout, or you can feel your brakes are a bit weird, it then occurs, like, okay, I need to be careful because I might crash.
Yeah.
But you're never thinking, oh, I hope I don't crash, really. You're just,
you obviously have radio. Do you ever sort of speak to yourself in the race with your radio off?
So the way the radio works is push to talk. So you hold it, which is good, because then you can, because say if I make a mistake, you swear under your
hand. Yeah,
or you get frustrated for sure. Or if you do a great overtake, I give a little shout, like, come on, like, let's go.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and I also let my engineer know that I'm very happy that I overtook them. There's a lot of emotion under the helmet. I think obviously some people will be more vocal than others. I think I'm probably quite quiet relative.
Do you ever want to just tell your engineer to shut up? Like, you see something.
There's been a few times where I literally.
What place?
It was in Donington when I was in the midst of a GT3 and GT4 battle, and both battles for the lead. So it was just happened that both battles met each other on track, and Jody, my engineer last season, was like, okay, this is for the lead of, and I was literally, I did two GT3s to my right and I had one Aston Martin to my left that was half on the grass. I had my engineer in my going, okay, this is for the lead of the race. And I was like, right, now is not the time. Mate. Is it really?
yeah, I'm sure. You must get close to the, leave me alone, I know what I'm doing.
Yeah, just leave me alone. But all the time, you have to leave a space, but you know. They're quite good at knowing when to talk or when not to.
I suppose it is their job at the end of the day.
And also, I think with GTs, obviously, there's a lot less communication in terms of, with F1, they're always having to change everything about the car. At all times, you always hear them going, fail 84, you know, all of those kind of things.
And
we don't have that in GTs.
And all those buttons on the steering wheel.
Yeah. And to change, because essentially it's a computer they're managing as well as a machine. So whereas in GTs, it's more letting you time management, how long, what lap you're on, how far is in front, how far the car behind is, kind of what's going on in the race, if there's a yellow flag at any part of someone's spun, or if someone's catching you, or if you need to try and pick up the pace. It's kind of that thing rather than actually. So I think that's why in F1 the drivers get frustrated, because the team, also they can see all the data, so that they'll be always telling the drivers about brakes, tyres, how to adjust this, what to do. And I think that's when the drivers get a bit annoyed, because when you want to get your head down, it's difficult for someone.
I mean, it must be quite hard when you're going around a corner and you're having to hold a button to speak. I find that kind of awkward.
That's the annoying thing, is you have to really be team, like, do it at the right time. So obviously on the straights is when you want to do it. Mm-hmm. But it's also quite difficult, because you've got a lot of other things, and you also want to answer them, because sometimes it's like, how much fuel have you used, which is crucial, because they have to know how much to put in the car. And you'll be mid-corner, and say a lot of circuits have big sections of just windy, right? So you have to sometimes just try and team radio with your hand on the button. It's in quite a place, but it's still quite annoying.
You need a third arm almost.
Yeah, literally, or just, I don't know, just a, I don't even know, to be honest. There's no good way about it, is there, really?
And what's your sort of experience with managing the tyres then? You sort of mentioned the pit stops there.
Yeah, so tyre management, it won't be as much of a factor this season, simply because each race is an hour long, so, which is fantastic. last season, obviously, we had the big 3 hours, so tyre and brake management was huge. I remember at Donington, the second Donington, it was a really hot day, and I remember in my first stint, we were really good, we were in third, and there was a second between first, second and third, and it was fantastic. And then my second stint, I was on a set of old, and straight away the performance just dropped, and they started overheating and stuff, so I had to really back off to make sure that I could keep them in a window, which is such a pain, to be honest. Is the frustration, but you know, long term, you won't lose as much time if you back off slightly. It's very frustrating, but it's just one of those sacrifices you have to do, really.
Yeah, I'm sure. So yeah, as we say, you can look out for Gus Racing. Is it Friday, Saturday, Sunday?
Yeah, so the race is Saturday and Sunday. So yeah, keep an eye. Obviously I'll drop my social media tag, but I'll post a timetable and stuff. So yeah,
very good of you. Put your tweet notifications on for Gus. We'll move on to the first race of the year at Bahrain in Formula One, which I mean, probably one of the best season openers we've ever seen. We slightly delayed review, but I mean, what a race!
Yeah, what did you think then?
I thought it was a brilliant race. I mean, it just shows to everyone, people who say Hamilton are overrated, just how good Hamilton is. Yeah. You know, he did what 15 laps on his second stint on that hard tyre, and then he did like, I think when I was doing write up for it, 27 or something on the final whilst holding up Verstappen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
People can say that Verstappen overtook him when Hamilton, you know, they're always going to find things about Hamilton, which annoys me a bit. And I'm not a Hamilton fanboy. You are. So you'll probably be even more annoyed about how him going, you know, was it turn seven, kept going wide, like what, 37 times and people, you know, clipping up every single time. I thought it was just a superb drive. It was really, really exciting towards the end when Verstappen, Hamilton, you know, battling out. It's almost like present v the future, merging together. And I mean, I don't trust Red Bull to maintain this performance over the whole season, but I'll be amazed if they do. And, you know, I'll pleasantly surprise. And I just really hope that they can, and we can see this season-long battle between, you know, Perez could get up there. Bottas at some races is quite good, you know. I think Bottas is actually a bit of an underrated driver because people just think it's rubbish. Hamilton and I suppose Hamilton Verstappen is the main battle. And I think I would love to see sort of a bit more, you know, more of that going forward. Imola, probably not going to be the best race. You know, we know what it was like last year. Yeah. But let's hope that we can, you know, see some more on-track fighting again.
Yeah, 100%. It was an awesome race, obviously controversial. But, I mean, there were battles. I loved that Alonso-Sainz-Vettel battle. You know, it was completely great. Everyone was leaving a nice amount of room, but it was really close racing, wasn't it? And like you said, Lewis really, I mean, it happened at Turkey last year. Everyone says the whole of last year, but he hasn't proved himself. And then Turkey happens. It's like, well, what more does he need to do? And then obviously it's great now that Red Bull have caught up overtaken. I agree with you in that I'll be surprised if they can maintain it or if Mercedes don't re-overtake. But it was awesome. I think one thing that annoys me is this thing that people have about like with Hamilton that he complains a lot. But I mean, what are you meant to do? Like that's what I don't understand is every driver does it. The only reason it seems as though Lewis does it is because obviously he's televised the most, and when it's for the race lead, You're going to hear his radio system. We'll say Alonso versus, I don't know, Vettel, both, and the same thing happened. You'd hear them both whinging and moaning. It's just natural, isn't it? You're not going to be happy about it. So also, I think this whole track limits thing, the FIA do need to be more clear. I mean, it was quite ironic that it was Red Bull that complained that Merck were abusing track limits. So the FIA then said, okay, you're not allowed to do it. And it was Red Bull that then ultimately did it that obviously meant Max had to give his place back. So they kind of shot themselves in the foot a bit there. But it was completely awesome. It was great watching Max versus Lewis. I think Max did an awesome job, especially by sounds of it, had a bit of a dodgy car at some points.
I think they're just saying that.
But you know, he did a great drive, but in my opinion, that's the difference. And that's why Lewis is seven times a champion, because when you need that extra, just that extra bit, he can do it. And it was fantastic watching. I hope that's just a small taste of what the season's going to bring for us. I mean, obviously, I hope, like you said, I hope Perez and Bottas both find their way in terms of pace. And why not have a four-way battle for the championship?
Oh, I imagine. That's like every F1 fan's wet dream.
Exactly. Do you know another thing is that I'm a bit sad that the new regs are coming in, because it always happens by the end of a regulation kind of period, everyone kind of is caught up with each other in terms of, and then the new regs, and then there's going to be a new person to dominate, and the gulf between first and last will be huge again. And I almost think, I wish they'd just delay it to like 2025 or something. Just, I know it's exciting when we've got a whole new cars, but I don't know, it would be, we've clearly, they've done a great job with those tiny changes in terms of mixing the field up a bit, but I don't know, we've got a championship battle for the first time since 2012. I'd love to, you know, it to stay like this for a few years, but you know, what can you do?
Yeah. I mean, the FIA, credit to them, have got it right with these floor regulations in giving an advantage to the low rake Red Bull cars. They're either low or high, and the Mercedes are the opposite. I mean, it has in the process screwed over Aston Martin.
Yeah.
Absolutely nowhere.
Mercedes and Aston are both low rate cars, so it's really not helped them. Aston clearly a lot more. They made that clear, didn't they?
Zaffner couldn't stop complaining.
Yeah, he couldn't stop going on about how it but I mean, come on, that's the way it is, and so do something about it. That's why I think we'll see Mercedes, is they haven't really whinged, have they? They've just said, I was quick, but we're going to be quicker.
Yeah, I mean, that's credit to Mercedes, what a good team they are. You know, you wouldn't be surprised if they go and dominate the 2022 regulations, because what it feels like is that they've maybe not developed as much as Red Bull and focused on 2022, whereas Red Bull have gone over the winter and said, everything on 2021, let's take it to Mercedes, and then they might be behind in 2022.
True. I mean, Red Bull have traditionally been quite good at adapting to regulation changes. I mean, they've through from obviously 2010 and then the 2014 changes, and they were still the third best team and then became second. It's been between them and Ferrari really for who's the second best. And
yeah.
You nailed.
I mean, Williams was second best. In
2014. Yeah, Williams, yeah. Of course. Yeah. And then, but Ferrari actually had a few bad seasons back then, didn't they? But then, you know, the 2017 regs came in and Red Bull was still there and thereabouts getting podiums and stuff. So they've been traditionally quite good. They've obviously got a great design.
They've always made a great car. So the engine and with the engines freezing for what, 5 or 6 years, or even 7 might be, at the end of this season, they have to submit their engines to the FIA and they can't change it for 5+ years, whatever it is. Honda looking quick, and Red Bull, you know, they might be thinking, ooh, you know, this might put us in good stead, you know.
So they've got a good engine, hasn't it?
Yeah, surprisingly.
That's exciting. I'm excited. I hope it is. I remember you messaged me just before quali, and you're like, right, is this when Merckx turn their engine?
Exactly. Yeah.
I wouldn't have been surprised, but it looked like that Honda, apparently, because you know they're pulling out, aren't they? And it's going to be.
Yeah.
And I think they've put a huge amount of investment into that engine and that car, so. Which is good to see, I think. So,
yeah, I suppose they don't really want to be sort of memed as they have been after, you know, the dreadful of McLaren Honda, and you know, haven't exactly been brilliant with Red Bull, you know.
Yeah, Red Bull have always been harsh. Even in their dominant era, they were really harsh on Renault. I remember through that the Mercedes engine was the best engine in the V8s by the end of it. You know, the Renault was still not bad, obviously. Red Bull's car was just so good that it didn't matter as much about what the engine was like, but they've always been very harsh on their engine suppliers. But I guess it's ultimately paid off, because it's pushed Honda to really invest in that engine, and my God, it looks like a good engine. So
let's just pray that it's not just Red Bull making an excellent car, if you know what I mean.
I completely agree. So. Yeah, it should be good. It should be, like you said, I'm excited for, I hope Imola's not as boring as it was last year. It's a great circuit to watch in terms of qualifying and stuff, but racing, obviously that's the problem with the current cars, is how wide they are. It wasn't great, was it? So hopefully it can throw up a bit of, but that being said, I remember the first ever race at Baku in Azerbaijan was horrific. And then the three races after that were probably the
excellent.
Best.
Yeah. I remember the first one was very boring, wasn't it?
Yeah. So let's not count that out, you know.
And then we also got Portugal the race after Imola, and that's just cracking circuit. Great, nice and wide. Yeah.
Good race as well, shouldn't it? Really.
So hopefully, all of this will make a good season.
Hopefully.
Actually, who I was really impressed with, Yuki Tsunoda, you know, he sort of backed off in the first lap and he came through the field, you know, went through, battled with Alonso, battled with Vettel, you know. This guy, first driver born in the 2000s in F1, you know.
Yeah, he was phenomenal all weekend. He obviously, he messed up his Q2 a bit? But, you know, that's experience and the way he dealt with it and then performed in the race, it was just phenomenal. And I remember I didn't really know him before the season. I remember you kept mentioning him last
year. Yeah.
Yuki Tsunoda is going to be, I'm just thinking, I haven't really heard much. Obviously, in F2, it was all about Mick Schumacher, so you don't really hear about many of the other drivers.
Yeah.
You're a lot more knowledgeable about the categories in single seaters than I am. And so, wow, what a job he did.
Too much time on my hands.
Yeah. But it's great. It was great. And he just did so well in that race. He was huge lunges into turn one, which is great to see.
He's always an overtaker, whereas Schumacher isn't a great qualifier and sort of gets a good start and then is able to hold them off, you know. I would love for Schumacher to prove me wrong, but I don't necessarily rate him that high. I rate Tsunoda higher.
I agree. I would definitely agree with that.
We can't actually judge in Formula One because Schumacher's in a car that, you know, my tractor up the road could go faster than that.
Yeah, honestly, that car is last year's car, just with different paint.
So, I mean, it's probably, 2019 as well, yeah. You've got to think for Haas, they're putting so much on 2022, you know, they're not even developing this car.
I know.
If they get 2022 wrong, if they're not near the front, you know, front of the midfield at least, you know, you've got to say, question sort of the future of Haas and sport. You know, Keane Haas, his name has been, don't forget that's his surname, that's being dragged through the mud with, you know, Mazepin and all that. Yeah,
that's why he's desperate to get rid of it now, isn't he? So,
sell it to Dimitri Mazepin. I mean, that whole team is a joke. I don't see them lasting.
I always would welcome you, and I always want teams to stay as much as the politics behind it. You know, they're ultimately a race team that want to win, but it's just they're at a point now where you're like, they've really put themselves in a position where it is all or nothing on next year, isn't it? If we go to testing and they're clearly at the back, well, how do they survive? How do they survive? Because I just can't see it working. And after if they fail the new regulations, if they're, you know, midfield, if they're fighting McLaren's and everyone, and they're ahead of, say, Williams Alpha and Alpha Tauri, then they've obviously done quite a good job. But if they're, you know, fighting to be not on the back row, then you've really got to question everything about them, really, and if they're going to survive. But yeah,
I mean, you have to sort of say, AlphaTauri sort of moving on. They look very, very quick. I mean, they've done. So, you know, the development tokens that they're only allowed but they're allowed to take some of Red Bull's plans, sort of from I think it's the nose or something. So they've got that, and they've got their own development tokens. And they were looking really quick. I remember Tsunoda was in front of both Mercs in Q2. I mean, bearing in mind it is Q2, I was like, whoa, what's happened here?
Yeah, no, it does genuinely look like a good car, doesn't it? Like, just a fast car.
It's interesting, though, because they seem to be in the midfield. Alpine look to be nowhere.
Yeah.
Aston Martin. Nowhere. They don't look good. Vettel looks, I mean, shocked. I mean, he hasn't had much time in the car. We bear that in mind. But
even his, it makes me sad. It's like his passion's just gone, hasn't it? Like,
yeah.
I liked
it. I always thought with Vettel, I was a bit more of a Webber fan, to be honest. So yeah, I am.
Was as well. Those.
Because if you read Webber's book, obviously there's always two sides to one story. But he used to talk about how Vettel would always get the better engine when they weigh the two engines and see which one is the higher performance of the weekend. You're meant to sort of rotate it between each drivers. Vettel would always get the better engine, and that wouldn't surprise me because, you know, the Red Bull Driver Academy thing, they, you know, the staff and all that kind of thing. And with Vettel, right, how many races apart from, you know, maybe that championship, was it 12 in Brazil when he got spun round and came through the field? Yeah. How many races has Vettel come through the field? Because all I remember from Vettel is him qualifying on pole and winning the race, you know?
Yeah.
There are very few when he comes through the field. Whereas if you take someone like Hamilton, you can name countless, like, phenomenal drives.
Turn round and off he goes back now, trying to get to back to first.
I mean, he is trying to do it with all the spins and trying to come through the field, but he's just spinning and remaining at the back.
That's a really good point. I've actually never thought about that at all, really. And that's true. You have a really good point. It's that Vettel, obviously, it's hats off to him that he was always from pole and then would lead and that's it. But you're right. Apart from Brazil, I can't really think of many occasions where he has had to, you know, fight his way through the whole field. It was always plain sailing, really, wasn't it? So,
yeah. I mean, also, because of this period, now Formula One fans like ourselves, you know, we're starting to think about, you know, that. And his reputation is getting sort of dragged through the mud in a way. Is this beginning of the end, you know? When he's saying that Ocon moved off his line and then it's Brundle's going 100% Vettel's fault there, you know, who's a mate of Vettel.
Yeah, obviously that was Vettel just speaking out of frustration in the car, but it was 100%. It wasn't even 70-30, it was 100% Vettel's fault, that incident.
I feel sorry for Ocon, actually. Sorry to interrupt you, because he seems to be like the hated man of the Formula One paddock for some reason. Like, he's done nothing wrong. Like, direct your hate to Mazepin, like, sure, whatever.
Yeah.
Ocon seems to be the hated person. Like, he's rubbish, whatever. I think Ocon's quite good. You know, he got quite good towards the end of last year.
He got podium.
Exactly. And you look at him in Force India. There were people who thought that he should have got chosen over Perez. You know, do you remember that when he got P3 in Spa?
Yeah. No, completely. I don't know why there's this weird thing about Ocon where it's like
everyone loves Perez and they say that whole argument was Ocon's fault. You look at it, Perez was equally as bad. You know, crashing him into the wall, was at Singapore. Eau Rouge. I do feel a bit. For Ocon in that way. I have a bit of an affinity to him because, you know, speaking to Lawrence, he said that Ocon's a really solid bloke. You know, and he's got better judgment than any of us. And he seems like a good guy, you know, from all his interviews, Drive to Survive, etc. Have you seen Drive to Survive yet, by the way?
I watched up to episode 6 and you know, when you're just busy and you kind of forget. I really need
one
to...
One for the journey, maybe.
I've enjoyed it so far, though. There are a few things that I've questioned. I've heard that the Carlos thing, the Carlos Norris thing.
They made, like, drama between Lando and Carlos. You know, Buxton's always like, well, you know, Carlos is leaving the team and this is Lando's time to shine, you know, and if he doesn't, could be out of a Formula One drive.
Yeah, and it's like,
you know what they're like.
I heard that. The thing that annoyed me so far that no one's spoken about, which did annoy me, is this whole Ricciardo being a snake to Renault. I just disagree completely. Like, he was on a 2-year deal, and after 2 years, clearly Renault weren't quite in a place that they should be. And so he's seen how good McLaren are, and so he's gone. He had a 2-year deal. He did it. I think he really helped the team, and off he goes now. And
he's made the right decision, because, I mean, he must have seen something with Alpine. To see,
well, look at their car,
yeah,
and look at McLaren. They're good. I think they've got a solid car. I think
they're P3 again. They're looking like P3.
I think I don't know why it was made that he was a snake. I mean, if he was on a 5-year deal and left after 2 years, that's different. But he wasn't. He was always on a 2-year deal. What did they? I always thought it was a bit of a stepping stone, like 2 years to wait for a seat to free up in a better team, but. I just don't know why it was made out that he's like, you know, it's like a heartbreak for poor old Cyril, wasn't it? So
yeah.
I don't know.
That driver pairing of Ricciardo and Norris looks really, really good for McLaren.
Yeah, I agree. That's an awesome, you know, you've got a mix of young and then experience and stuff. So it's great, isn't it?
Yeah, the old and the young pretender, as they say.
Exactly.
I suppose to finish off, Williams, you know, we didn't see much of them, but they're looking all right.
Yeah, do you know what? I think Williams, I think, honestly, they've made the best out of a dire situation in terms of their car fundamentally is a bad race car. And no matter what you kind of do and what aero you add to it or whatever, it's not going to be that good. Russell, was it 14th?
He qualified. Yeah, squeezed Q2 again.
And did he finish there?
Yeah, I have a chase. I'll look it up.
Not even, we don't even know, like, the end result. Like,
Russell is a phenomenal driver. You know, I think it's a matter of when, not if, he gets that Mercedes drive. People want it.
And I think Williams, I mean, I think they're in a positive place, you know?
He finished 14th.
So that's phenomenal, I think. I think Latifi, I like Latifi a lot, and I think he's got a lot of potential. I think he maybe still lacks a bit of confidence.
He's a good race driver, actually, but just not in qualifying is poor.
Yeah, I think his qualifying is it's a bit of a bit of like a Gasly or Albon when they're at Red Bull situation, in the sense that it's almost like when the car's completely on the edge, he just doesn't have the confidence to take it there at the moment. Yeah. But I think he will. I really think he will. I like him, and I think he did well at F2. He was solid at F2. And I think it's only a matter of time, or hopefully by the end of the season, he'll start challenging Russell a bit. Obviously, Russell, like you said, is a phenomenal driver. So I hope to see him in a top team next year. But Williams, it looks like they're in a good place, I think, now. Relative to 2019. New investors, whole new structure. I think they could be on for points this year for sure. Obviously, luck dependent, and if things go their way.
Did you see their strategy of targeting? They targeted a very small number of races in the calendar, will be quick. That's their strategy. I mean, it's dangerous, you know, if they crash out these. We don't know these races, so one of them could well be Bahrain. We might turn up to Imola, and they're both 20 and 19th. You know what I mean? But it's an interesting strategy.
Yeah, I think Bahrain was one of the ones they're saying they're not going to be good at. I remember Russell saying it was the wind is their weakest thing, is their car when it's windy is just impossible. And Bahrain, obviously, traditionally is a very windy circuit. So to see them do that well. And I really hope we see Williams with the new investment. So there's not really the excuse of they don't have money anymore, because they do now. I really hope we see them in the midfield ahead of Haas and Alfa Romeo, especially. And you know, now in amongst Alpine and Aston Martin would be awesome, wouldn't it? I think we'd all love to see that.
Yeah, I mean, as a Williams fan, I would love to see them sort of back up there again. Hopefully in 2022 they can.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I'm a huge Williams fan as well, and they're 10 minutes down the road from me as well, which is always awesome. When I was in year 10, I did my work experience there, and to see kind of what was going on in the history and behind that team, it is just fantastic. I don't think there's a single fan on the whole grid that doesn't want to see them back up, getting points and long term fighting again once again for championships, because that would just be awesome.
Yeah, I mean, okay. I think everyone in Formula One sort of has that sort of affinity and connection, in a way, if you know what I mean, to Williams.
Yeah, definitely. They're just awesome, aren't they? They're just an awesome team. It was sad. It was painful, wasn't it, watching them go through that horrific spell in 2019. But
they've
Oh god, it was horrible, wasn't it? It was just horrible.
We'll round off with our final thought for our predictions for Imola. There's your warning. I'm sure we'll do an episode on our 2022, that's the year, driver predictions, who's going to be on the grid.
Definitely.
But I think there's a shoe-in for a Russell Mercedes seat.
I think it will be. I think Toto as promised, I in my mind, because does Toto manage Russell?
Yes, he manages Ocon as well. So it could be awful.
I think he said to Russell, especially after the Sakhir race, I think he said, "Do one more year with Williams, and you will be in a Merc from 2022 onwards." I think Bottas has done a really really
Solid job of number solid two.
Yeah. He's done exactly what they've wanted him. He's come second or third. He's got a podium pretty much every race. And he's not made too many mistakes. And obviously the reason he hasn't been winning is because Lewis is just a bit better. But I think we'll see Russell in a Merc. And it might be a whole new Mercedes driver lineup because we might see Lewis go. And
I think Lewis will stay for the regulations.
I think he'll want to try out the new cars. So
it would be a shame for Russell if he gets to Mercedes and then the car's not the best car on the field. Williams are ahead of him.
Can you imagine? Oh, gosh. Poor guy.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. So I did mention predictions for Imola. So you do your top three for qualifying and top three for race. And I'll let you have the honour of going first.
Right. So qualifying. Oh, God. I'm going to say Max, Lewis,
ooh,
Perez.
Oh.
Okay. And then race, I'm going to say Max, Lewis, and then I'm going to say, I think that'll be a wild card. I think Bottas and Perez might fumble it a bit. And I think I'd like to see, I think maybe, you know, a Norris. I think Norris.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah.
So for me, I'm going to do a shoo-in for qualifying.
There you go.
Of Perez on pole.
Wow.
It's not impossible, you know, it's not a very good qualifier.
It's
not a great qualifier, but, you know, let's just imagine. And then P2 is going to be Hamilton and P3 Verstappen.
Nice.
Okay, and then in the race, I think that Hamilton will win.
Yeah.
I think Verstappen will come second.
Yep.
And I am going to say Bottas will become third.
Nice. Do you know who I'm excited for is Gasly? Because I think...
He looked quick.
And they're good.
Well, he qualified in fourth in Imola last year.
Yeah, and they've got a better car than they did last year, so...
Yeah, I mean, it was a shame for him. Hopefully Tsunoda can be up there as well. I mean, everyone's sort of jumping on this Yuki Hybrid train at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, happy day. I mean, I think we all are. Let's be honest. We all are.
It's not long before the old Amazon posters Yuki Tsunoda plastered all over the wall.
Yeah, exactly. So, do you know what? I might just become a huge Tsunoda fanboy after once Lewis goes.
You're already scouting your candidates.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's between Tsunoda and Russell, to be honest.
Yeah, I like Russell. He's probably my favourite driver at the moment. But anyway, that's been good fun recording again. Yeah. Good luck.
Good to be back.
Yeah. Good luck for the race in Monza.
Thank you.
Are you a pineapple on pizza, man?
Absolutely not. I just will just cry if I see that. So are you?
I'm not adverse to having it. They wouldn't be my first choice, but I'm not gonna lie. I've had pizzas with pineapple before.
You have.
Traitor.
Yeah, there you.
thank you everyone for listening as always. You sort of know the drill by now, but if you don't, you can follow, you can subscribe, you can leave a 5-star rating. And where can you follow Gus Bowers?
Follow me. Don't.
Not in real life, on the internet.
In real life, I'll be a bit scared if you do, but on the internet. You can follow me on Instagram at Gus Bowers and on Twitter at GusBowers44 and on TikTok at Gus Bowers as well.
Any TikTok content from the weekend? Any on boards? You
know, I'm going to try and do like a day in the life of at maybe the test day. That'd be quite cool.
So, you could film some. If you film some longer footage, then we can put it on the YouTube.
Oh, that's a cracking idea.
Well, see if you have time. Don't worry about it too much.
Yeah, no. Yeah, definitely. Cool.
Yeah, and you can follow me on Twitter at FergieMaster, and you can also follow us on Instagram at UndersteerPodcast.
Yeah.
I was experimenting with some. Was it track quizzes I was doing the other day? I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we can try and bring a bit more content over there for you to enjoy. So make sure. So you go and follow us on all the relevant platforms. Most importantly, Gus, TikTok. But
yeah, exactly.
And that is it for now. Stay safe, everyone, and bye bye.